There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Phone number and the text line, 251. So you only have to remember one string of numbers, or maybe you can put that in your contacts, makes it easy. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106 for a call or a text. And a reminder, too, with the FM Talk 106.5 app, you have the additional feature. There's a microphone icon there on the front page. If you press that, lets you record a message, emails it to the show, and we can play it back here on the radio. You know, just commenting about our guest this hour, to see him in studio dressed like this is a possible, it is a first for me, or at least over the last 12 years. Mayor Sandy Stimson joining us dressed not in a tie and not in a suit, but a pair of khakis and a button-down shirt. Good to see you, sir.
It's great to be here, Sean.
That's the look. That I mean, you still got to wear a suit for stuff, but you don't have to wear it every day now, do you?
That's right. But I used to wear khakis every day at the sawmill.
You did? Yes, you did. Yeah. You wore khakis and blue jeans before that, but then, well, you're the dog that caught the car. You're elected mayor.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden, you're in suits.
That's right.
You know, I think I've said this so many times over the last year here, and when you talked about not running, absolutely 100% the best mayor this city has ever seen.
Well, I appreciate that.
I mean, no baloney.
Right.
You know, in just number one, the person you are. Okay, that's the basis of this thing we're going to build, because you're a great human being. I know you at levels beyond just being down at the mayor's office.
Yeah.
You're a great human being. Beyond that, everything rose from that. And our city truly has changed. I always screw this up. My teachers, logarithmically, exponentially, one of those things,
right,
has changed so much in 12 years. I mean, and you deserve so much credit.
Well, thank you, Sean. It's mighty kind of you to say that. But as I continue to say, there's so many things that happened leading up to me being the mayor, the people that came on board, just the opportunities, so much was teed up. And we had to do some house cleaning, had to do some things differently. But there were a lot of people that were engaged in trying to really, and I think it all stemmed from, we created a vision to unite this community. That was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we never lost focus of that. And so today, as I sit here, I can say that Mobile is safer, more business, and more family-friendly city. Mm-hmm. And there are things that we didn't accomplish, but we sure did get a lot accomplished, and that was a team effort.
Yeah, I want to talk about all those. I do want to go back before we even get into that.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we ever, over the 12 years, I mean, maybe when you were running, we talked about it, but what led you to run? I mean, it's not like you were a lifelong politician. I mean, you're a businessman.
Yeah, so, and I've made this comment in the last, really, for the last 48 hours, is that I really feel like this was a calling, like calling to be a preacher, calling to be a teacher, you know. And so there was a series of circumstances that occurred in my mid-50s, let's say, where people were just asking me kind of on a regular basis about running for office. And there were a couple of them that were pretty pivotal. But at one point, I just told Gene, I said, you know, I really don't want to get to heaven. And God said, Sandy, I kept sending you a message. And by that, I mean, you know, I think that the Lord can talk to you through other people, through circumstances and his word. And so I said, I don't want to get there. And he said, why didn't you get the hint? You know, I kept on doing
The old joke, you know, God says guys stuck on his roof, and God sends a guy
to
canoe.
That's right. And so that I felt like it was something that I was supposed to do.
Is that because it wasn't just a one-off? It got to be regular.
Yes, it was. It really went on over a period of several years, and I can't really remember the first time somebody said something. But you know, when you get exposure, when you're a finance chairman for somebody like whether it's Jeff Sessions or somebody running for, I mean, there are a lot of elected officials that I helped raise money, and then when I got involved with the Chamber of Commerce, you get closer to the elected arena, and then when you're the chairman of the BCA, you're closer to the elected arena, and so you start seeing all this stuff, and you're thinking, you know, I have backed all these people, you know, and a lot of them have done exactly what you'd hope they would do, but some did not. And then you realize, you know, who's going to do it? And so finally it was like, you know, it doesn't look like anybody's going to do it. Maybe I really am supposed to do this.
Be the man in the ring, as Roosevelt talked about.
Yeah.
So you decide, you come in, you win. Now you walk in, and I remember those days, the city had some big issues. And one of the things I saw you come in, you talk about house cleaning, and I've gone back and back on this over decades talking about it on the show, and I'm a fiscal hawk, I guess, to watch what you did, you and your staff, Paul Wesch and everything, did. It was an amazing turnaround. You just don't ever hear that discussed for a city, because people say, well, we need a business leader to you know, do whatever. And sometimes they go, yeah, sometimes it was absolutely necessary. You saw it through eyes that it hadn't been seen before.
Well, I really had some help in that. And you know, if I've mentioned the names before, but I have to say that John Saint had a lot to do with coaching me up. And then he was coaching Paul, and Paul was on a finance oversight committee. But I grew up in a business, the lumber manufacturing business, and it's very cyclical. It's highly capital intensive. You're buying equipment every year. You're buying rolling stock. You're buying these things. And you're really buying timber to make into lumber, and you could be buying it today and not cutting it for a year or 2 years, not knowing what that market's going to be. So you have to develop some fiscal responsibility, courage, our guts, and realize that you've really got to cross T's and dot I's. And I think that that had a lot to do with the seeing things that maybe some others did not see. Because just because you have been a businessman, it depends on what business you've been in.
True.
And I was happened to have been the CFO, and so I was seeing things and making projections to banks and to the, you know, all the lenders or whatever the situation was. And so you learn to make sure that you're accurate and that you try to look at what all the risks are. Well, and when it got to city government, you know, and of course it had come at the time I got in, there'd been a downturn in the economy, so things were tough. But there didn't appear to be things. Things were not adopted and done that you would do in the business world during a tough market. Okay. Now, our approach was we said, these are city employees. We didn't have a lot of names. We didn't know who they were, but allow me to invest 20, 30 years with the city. So we didn't lay off anybody.
Right.
Well, we said, we're just not going to hire anybody. And if, to the degree we can move people around, we'll move them around. And so we put the hiring freeze in, and we started looking at everything that we were doing. And there were things that you just didn't need to do. And we said, stop it, you know. But I would say this too, though, Sean, that there are probably things, if somebody came in today, they would look at that and they'd say, why are Sandy and them doing this today, you know? So I don't want to be too critical, but things are going pretty good right now. I
mean, yeah,
so you've got cash flow. You've got it. And that's really, I told the staff upon leaving, the team upon leaving, it's a dangerous time. When the parents is you're flush with money, you start making mistakes and you start doing things that maybe you shouldn't do.
If you didn't ever know the bad time.
That's right.
Then that's right. And when you came in too, it was efficiencies that it impressed me as well. It wasn't ham-fisted and wholesale cuts. Like you said, you didn't lay off people. But over those first couple of years, I kept going, why didn't we ever know about that before? Or why is it important to get the balance of the budget here? Oh, gosh, we get a better credit rating. Look how many dollars we're paying in interest that we're not going to have to pay if we get a better credit rating. I mean, that was like slam dunk. Let's get that done.
Well, you see a lot of cities doing refinancing, and Paul orchestrated all of that. And that saved us a boatload of money.
We consolidated. It was huge.
Consolidated all the what we called the legacy debt. We kind of just dubbed it as legacy debt, but that was all the previous bond issues that we had. And so we put it on a schedule to be paid out, so that every month we knew exactly what it was going to be. And so in another 3-4 years, it'll all be paid off. You know, and it's down to, you know, less than $100 million right now, but it started off at, I think, it's like $315 million. And until we had to borrow money for the arena, we didn't borrow a dime.
And the way you came in, what you did to right-size those expenditures, obviously, credit rating improved. The banks, you get a better interest rate. I mean, this is, as business owners, we know about it, and personal people know about it, but they never think about it in the public sector until you came in and said, well, by the way, we could do better on interest rate.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Because the interest rates in the sawmill business and lumber manufacturing, I mean, we were looking at it.
It's a big deal.
All the time.
Capital intensive.
And every time there was an opportunity to lower them, you know, we worked with the banks to make sure that we did that.
I just don't know in the public sector until you that I had seen that done at a municipal level where anybody even asked that question.
Yeah. Well,
like, what can we do? And then then all of a sudden this money that was going to interest before now is going to principal, and we started gaining on things, and that just built a positive snowball.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Sean, there's still things today from an efficiency standpoint that can be done. I don't think it ever stops because—
There's not a finish line?
There's really not. I mean, because you can fix a department or fix two or three departments, and then you have some turnover. You may have a new superintendent, a new director, and then something gets slack. And so then our new technology comes available, and then you need to look at that. And so it's you never get to the finish line. It's a process. As Coach Saban says, it's a process.
Well, pretty good person to quote there on that.
Yeah.
All right, coming right back, more with Mayor Stimson right here on Midday Mobile. We'll get your questions as well at 343-0106.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, and good to have Mayor Sandy Stimson in studio now for the first time I've seen him over 12 years, not in a suit and tie, khakis and a shirt, which, by the way, many questions here, I'll consolidate them from many folks ask, and so is the missus gotten sick of you being home all the time yet? I don't believe you're home all the time. I don't buy that.
No. So
Gene hadn't said, get out of here?
We haven't gotten a routine yet.
Okay.
Okay, so we're not sick of each other yet, but it hasn't been 2.5 weeks.
She didn't say, like, you got to go find a hobby. You got hobbies. I want to talk about that later, too. But we talked during the break, too, about you coming in 12 years ago. Things were going on. Annexation, it's very interesting, too, kind of bookends to your time as mayor. Annexation was a thing that you came in not too long after an annexation, and then annexation here at the end of your term.
So the comment that we made when we were offline was that really the city of Mobile benefited from the annexation that Mayor Jones did, and because that started generating more revenue for the city, and really as each year went by, you know, assuming there's those stores there increase their sales, you know, then it directly impacts the city through sales taxes. And so that was something that was a little different. So it wasn't just that we cut expenses, so it was a revenue deal as well as an expense deal. And the same thing will happen for Mayor Spiro is that he will benefit from the annexation because there'll be additional growth in the area. There'll be more sales taxes generated in the areas that we annexed. And so from a cash flow generation standpoint, then, you know, he'll be in better shape than we were and have an opportunity to do things because of that.
Yeah, and when you can, those things that you're talking about, the grow revenue for a municipality, but you're not drugged down by debt.
Yeah.
That is just, because you could grow, I mean, if the debt is out of control, you can keep growing, you know, you keep raising the top line, but you you still can't, you're not getting anywhere. It's the same percentage behind, even though the numbers are bigger.
So, when we talk about debt, and what goes through my mind is how much debt can you afford to service every month or every year? And so by refinancing the debt, we strung it out, and so we pegged a number so we knew exactly what it was that we could afford to pay that even if the economy got bad. So when I look forward based on the new debt and the legacy debt and the police fire pension rolling cost rolling off, I mean, the new debt that we just put on could be paid off in 20 years. And I think it's interesting to
see. Is that what the note is? Is it?
Yes.
Because I have worried. I saw that number. It seemed like a big number.
It's interest only for a couple of years, but it's
it's a 20-year note.
20 years. And so the legacy debt rolls off in by 2030. The new debt rolls off, let's just say if it's 2025, so 20 years from now. But the thing about it is that typically when a city or county adds that kind of debt that we've added for the arena, you know, they said, well, we've got to generate more sales to do that. Okay, we're going to sell more T-shirts, more Coca-Colas, more meals, whatever. We didn't factor in a single penny for increased sales coming out of the new arena to have it.
So you're not dependent on that.
We can service the debt based on the legacy debt rolling off and what's coming out of the general fund right now to pay that down. And what's paying the police and fire pension fund.
Okay.
So that's why we can do it in 20 years and get it paid off.
It's not a maybe. That money's going to be there to pay it off. It's not these things have to happen to have the.
That's exactly right.
Now, one of the, and looking at the way that deal was built from where I'm looking at it, from the outside, I liked is the private sector running it has a incentive. Like the city gets money. They got to get money for the city to get money. I mean, there's an incentive for that private sector, not just like, hey, run the place, you know, show up and unlock it. You've got to do something.
Yeah, OVG will do an excellent job. The way the deal was structured is there is a, probably not the exact terminology, but let's say a profit share. And so if they get to a certain level, then the city's going to get money, but they continue to get more money too.
Right.
So
yeah, there's a reason for them to try harder.
That's right.
Which makes sense to my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. There's they definitely have the incentive for them to try harder, do better, and all of us will benefit from that.
Let's talk about, you know, that's new infrastructure. I remember you showing a pipe, and somebody was talking about the infrastructure, legacy infrastructure. You showed me a pipe that was a piece of wood. You remember that?
Yeah,
it was dug up. And if y'all didn't ever see this picture, so Mayor has this, they were, I don't know, was that on St. Louis or something?
It was either a cypress log or a pine log that
hollowed
had been bored
out.
And that was either a water pipe or probably a water pipe. Yeah, at one time.
Y'all, I mean, I'm serious.
Downtown Mobile.
They're doing it, somewhere downtown. They dig it up. Mayor gets this thing. And it's just a hollowed out log. You know, that's what happens when you're 300 years plus old as a city.
Right. Yeah.
But that's challenges that they're not going to have in Topeka, you know, they're not going to have in Birmingham even. So this infrastructure under the ground, I've often said this, that watching y'all, just elected officials, you know, you have a groundbreaking for something or opening it, cutting ribbons or the ceremonial shovel for the first thing. That's all great. That gets the attention. But day in and day out, what doesn't, I wish it got more attention was, you know, drainage, sewage, roads, paving. I mean, that's kind of the boring stuff, but it's some of the most important stuff.
Well, you bring up a good point, one that needs to be touched on, and that is that with the capital improvement plans, CIP, the penny sales tax, that's where the revenue is generated from. You know, we divide that money seven ways, spend $3 million, now it's $4 million in every city council district. The city councilors, they want to weigh in and they want to fix certain streets, they want to fix the other parks and so forth. Because they have some ownership there. But the thing that you just said was, it's not very sexy to fix ditches.
It isn't.
And so that's the last thing they want to fix. And so what we allowed to happen, and I don't think we didn't realize it at the time, was we were not spending enough money on stormwater drainage and all. So, but going out the door, we set aside $10 million, or maybe it's $5 million this first year. But we have planted the seed with the existing city council that they have got to make sure that the stormwater drainage is absolutely funded, and it'll take 4 or 5 years to, and maybe even take longer than that because a lot of it has to be rebuilt. But there's a lot of wear and tear on the drainage in the city of Mobile because of the amount of rainfall we have, but also a lot of these are open ditches, and because of the rainfall we have, you have so much growth in those ditches, and so just the maintenance of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking back, I wish we had spent more money on just the maintenance, you know, the vegetation, mm-hmm. cleaning out the siltation in those ditches. And that's why when I said a few minutes ago that it's never over, okay? You put emphasis sure. in one area, then you realize that you probably didn't put enough emphasis somewhere else. And so we did not put enough emphasis on the drainage, but it's coming.
I think they'll
be doing a better job.
Here's how we encourage it. As citizens, y'all, because there's not usually a ribbon cutting or a chrome-plated shovel event for these, yeah. when you see your members of the city council when something's done there, give them an attaboy or attaboy for doing that stuff, because they usually don't. They're getting the rah-rah-rah on the TV cameras. TV news goes out when there's a new building starting or something like that. They don't go out when, hey, the ditch is being cleaned.
Yeah.
So give them an attaboy.
I don't know if we've got time to say it, but the biggest challenge we have is trees. Tree roots. Yeah. Getting into the drainage. These are the closed pipes, okay?
And when we come back, I want to talk about tree roots and sidewalks.
Yeah.
Because those two things go together, and what a change in sidewalks we've had. Yeah. Coming right back. More with Sandy Stimson right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along and having a great conversation with Mayor Sandy Stimson. Not in a suit and tie now. We're going to find out, though, if he ever will put one back on. But we're gonna ask that question in a second. You know, we went to break, and we're talking about the tree roots and what is done in the city. This is really interesting. Talk about efficiencies and trying to get more efficient, and you're never at the finish line. This one you told me about, talking trees here. Y'all, listen to this.
So years and years ago, you know, the city of Mobile was designated as a tree city.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go back to that, because of development, there were a lot of trees that were taken down as the city grew, and it was upsetting to a lot of people, especially when you took down live oak trees. So they created a city ordinance. Forcing developers or property owners to plant so many trees as they develop a new building or
like a mitigation or something.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, and it's very stringent, and it's checked very closely to make sure that you do it right. Well, the increasing cost that the city of Mobile is going to see because we have overplayed our hand on that, it's going to be millions. I'm not exaggerating, millions of dollars. Most of the broken infrastructure in the city of Mobile, if it's sidewalks, and it can be sometimes streets, but the drainage almost 100% of the time is a result of trees.
So the city's having to pay to fix that.
It could be the leaves of the trees, you know, that are stopping things up, but also the root system.
You tell me about these roots that grow right into the pipes.
Oh, yeah. There was a pipe over by where Claude Moore was that a cypress root got into where the crack was in the pipe, and it plugged it exactly as a cork would. And we had to, you know, section it out of there. But all over the city of Mobile, if you've got drainage where it's not working, even on Government Street, I bet you 10 to 1 that it's tree related. Now, we're not going to go cut down a lot of these, you know, the legacy trees. But we do need to quit planting them.
But we have a new legacy because people are required to plant trees now that will end up buckling sidewalks or messing up drainage.
From the standpoint of the visual, just ride by Taco Mama between there and Wiedemeyer's, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
You know, like where are those roots going to go?
Yeah, they're not going to stay in that little bitty 2x2 footprint. Not a live oak.
Nope.
So. Shayla Biko and our team are working on trying to change some of the terminology, but to change the requirements in the tree ordinance so that hopefully we will quit doing that so that we won't continue to have this broken infrastructure created by the trees.
Yeah, I mean, to hear you say this, I mean, y'all think about it, not just the issue, but city ordinance requires the person to put the trees in that will later require the city to spend money to fix a problem with the sidewalks or the drainage.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's not efficient.
It's not only not efficient, it's borderline idiotic.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
You know, we got started on this talking about sidewalks, and I'm thinking about there are so many changes in that maybe we didn't see. That's why I wanted to start off with the fiscal things, but stuff we did see. Sidewalks in our city. And this was a big thing for you. You know, I remember early on you talking about, let's get the litter up, let's not throw trash in our city, and let's put some sidewalks in. And it's one of these things, on the flip side, I tell folks, until I went away my first time, I didn't realize everybody didn't grow up in a place with Mardi Gras and a battleship in your backyard.
Yeah.
But I didn't think about it until sidewalks were put in, that like, we don't have sidewalks a lot of places back then. It was eye-opening.
So if you go way back, there was a requirement as you built subdivisions to have sidewalks. And then through the power of persuasion, you know, developers were able to talk the planning department of the city council out of putting sidewalks in certain of our neighborhoods, which really has hurt the value of the properties.
Mm-hmm.
Because where you have neighborhoods or subdivisions with sidewalks, you know, the property values are higher. But the other thing, because people, you look at where we've put sidewalks in and look at how they're being used, it's really amazing. And so the other challenge, though, that we have with the sidewalks is so many of them are broken up because of, I'll say, the tree roots and tree damage. And then you get into a real dilemma. You want to fix the sidewalk.
Well, which one do you do?
Yeah, so you really need to cut the root out of the way. Well, then everybody goes, you know, nuts that you cut the roots because you can kill the tree. Well, what, are you going to have an ADA lawsuit over the sidewalk because you can't, you know, walk down the sidewalk?
Well, heck, you can, not even ADA, you can be an able-bodied person, and some of those,
oh, absolutely.
going down Dolphin or going down, I mean, there were sections there, like, if I hit that on a bike, I'd go 5 feet in the air.
Absolutely. Some of them truly impassable.
Yeah.
But there's a real effort, and has been for a number of years, wheelchair accessibility on some of the intersections that we have. So there is a program fixing a lot of that, but it will take a long time because, matter of fact, you fix some, and then, you know, 3 years from now, you'll have some new ones that are broken.
And new roots.
Because we continue to do things that we probably shouldn't be doing.
Well, the new sidewalks and then connecting them was a thing. There were things you did that I was like, from the time I heard about it, I was excited. There's things you also were putting in with the council. I was like, I don't really know until I saw it. It's also like the attention you put on green space in the city. Once again, had not really thought about it until you started talking about it. And I said, yeah, you know, that's one of those things that we're both coming from a business perspective. The ROI is not direct on that, but now as I've aged, I see the ROI value.
Yeah.
In having green spaces for people in a city.
Quality of life deal.
It is.
But Sean, a lot of that really started before Sandy. Okay, the village of Spring Hill, they had a sidewalk program where they were getting grant money, they were raising private money, getting the city to contribute money. The Three Mile Creek Greenway, that really started before I was involved. We just happened to be there when we started needing to raise the money and actually doing the construction. But the conversation and some of the design and some of the planning,
I didn't know that
started before I was the mayor. And so there's a lot of credit due to the people that had the vision to do that. Initially, I did not buy into the idea of the Three Mile Creek Greenway. Because I was down on the lower end of Three Mile Creek and Conception Street Road, and I couldn't visualize anybody wanting to walk along that.
Right.
Well, it's not that way all the way up and down the trail.
And those were bigger projects, but just connecting sidewalks in the city with another place that had a sidewalk, this idea of, you know, and I know with all the serious stuff, although I think it is serious, it's going on with running a city, but the idea of being able to ride a bicycle and not have to get on the roadway between A and B, or walk, you know, and not have to walk in the road.
Yeah.
After, you know, you're raising kids, you're like, don't walk in the dang road.
Dad, there's nowhere else. Well, look at Broad Street. I mean, what we did on Broad Street, you know, was amazing. Complete street rebuild, very expensive. Excuse me, but when we opened up McGregor from the roundabout, from Dolphin to Airport Boulevard, which should open up pretty soon, I think people are going to be amazed at what that's going to do.
You know, talk about those projects as well, and I've talked to members of the council and just said how I think they can do their, not job better, but their PR better. I said, you know, it's taken so long on that section of McGregor. and then to find out all the things that had to be changed. I just said, hey, when this gets ready to happen, just have a presser and say, hey, y'all, this is going to take a long time, but let me show you why. Here's Bob. Bob's going to say, well, we have to replace stuff that's from the 1950s that's in there, and it's gas lines. And just tell folks, and they'll go, okay. Because they're like, aren't they just paving it?
And you really don't know what's down there because you don't have the plans of what was put there. So you start digging and you go, oh, my gosh.
Surprises?
Then you have to, oh, yes. And then you have to go redesign based on what you found. But none of it could be done if it was not for the collaboration between the, I'll say, County Pago, as well as Malls does a terrific job, Alabama Power Company, and all of them come to the table, typically with dollars, you know, to fix their and capital to the project. Otherwise, it wouldn't happen. And so, because the city of Mobile doesn't have the funding to it. And when you rebuild a street, whether it's St. Louis Street or whether it's McGregor, you've got to have the gas company there. You've got to have Malls there. And you've got to coordinate and collaborate.
For sure. I want to get a couple of these texts here, too. Jason said, what was your largest obstacle or disappointment during your time in office?
I guess it was an education thing and an awareness is how long it took to make things happen in city government. It just takes a long time.
Was that tough coming from the private sector to public?
Yes, it really is. It's hard to swallow. But you know, that was probably the greatest thing, and because it doesn't take, you know, it could take an individual or a small group of individuals to slow things down. And anyway, so that's just frustrating.
As far as the
disappointment. I was disappointed that we didn't make the first annexation happen, but there's a lot of reasons we didn't, but because of what we learned from that failure, we were able to succeed the second time. So I'm sure there are other disappointments, none that I don't dwell on those. I like
sure.
to think of the things that we were successful in doing, and so, but those are a couple of them.
Because Jason's question kind of gets me teeing up a thing I wanted to ask you. We take the Wayback Machine. So you now get to travel back 12 years, and you're like, hey, Sandy, it's Sandy. Here's something that you need to know that you don't know now going forward. What would you – advice you would tell year one, you know, Bear Stimson, that you could – you know, if we travel back in time, you'd tell him?
So I would tell any incoming mayor that all the boards that exist in the city of Mobile – it could be the Downtown Alliance. It could be the Museum Board. All of these entities, the Airport Authority, they have so much impact on the mayor's time, okay? Because if there's something that that happens, you know, that maybe it's not exactly between the guardrails, then all of a sudden the mayor's got a challenge and got to deal with it. And so if I could help the mayor tangentially, it would be to help go to some of these boards from a governance standpoint and show them how things could be done better. Because typically somebody's put on a board, they're not really explained everything about it, they don't really understand the function. They may be there because they help somebody on a campaign, okay? But they don't bring any real expertise. They're nice people, they're smart people, they don't bring expertise that's maybe needed for that entity. But there are things that you can do to orient new board members and make sure they understand their responsibilities, make sure they don't stay on boards too long, because you get people that, that think they're going to retire on that board after, you know, 10 or 15 years, and then nobody's going to say anything because the old guy's there and they're just going to listen to him, and so things stagnate. So to really have a vibrant, I think, community, you've got to have young people on these boards. They've got to be active. They've got to understand where their lane is and stay in that lane, because it's all really supportive of typically quality of life issues for the city of Mobile.
And so that would not require the mayor to be as involved then.
That's
if they
right.
didn't
I mean,
have...
If they were, well, that's the one that operates the best, and I don't mean to offend anybody, but really is the Art Museum Board. They go raise money. They understand what their responsibility is, and they do a really good job.
There you go. So that's the best practices. If they can put out a book, could we read that one? So y'all, y'all think about that.
I think they have it. I think they have the manual. I mean, I think they – but it comes back to leadership, too.
Okay, if y'all got a copy of that, please drop it off here at our office. Coming right back. More with Mayor Sandy Stimson.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Calls and texts here in just a second. Speaking of calls, let's do a call out to my buddy David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. Get an update here midweek. Hey, David.
Hey, man. How you doing? We got a good week going. We got four more vehicles came in today. So we got some things coming in that are sold that we've been, like we talked about the other day, searching for stuff. Got a Toyota Tundra going out to a customer today that's one that we've been looking for. We want a very specific vehicle, white or silver, and he wanted that 1794 edition, which has got the different color interior. Not a very easy vehicle to find, but he's very patient, and we actually found what he wanted. Had to get out of South Carolina.
Okay.
Got a 4Runner fixed to deliver to another customer we found for his daughter. So, that works, plus, all the regular stuff we got on the lot. We got 70 units on the ground.
I'll tell you what, if people want to check out that inventory, too, they do it online. Your brand-new website looks fantastic.
Thank you. The mobile site and the it's creating a lot of new leads and a lot of new credit apps. So it's very user friendly. I mean, people are grabbing hold of it and running with it. It's not something that you're trying to figure out how to maneuver around. I mean, it's very user friendly. So
check it out. Where? Give them the address.
It's LCMMotorCars.com. Come see us. We're at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. Or just give us a call, 251-375-0068. Credit apps and all on our website are all secure, so feel comfortable putting your information in. It's not going anywhere.
Hey, thanks, David.
All right, buddy. Have a good day.
All right. There goes David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. Continue our conversation with Sandy Stimson here, who is, for the first time in 12 years, in the studio without a suit and tie on, which I like. We'll get to a question about that in a second. But I want to ask you this, too. Do you, we traveled in the time machine. I had to travel back to talk to new Mayor Stimson. I want to talk about how you feel you've changed from day one, to the end of your term. You said earlier you had to figure out, hey, public doesn't work at the pace of private. Do you look back and go, this changed me, or did something change?
Well, Sean, I think that as we get older,
because you don't, but you don't age.
As we get wiser, there are things that you just learn, and then it changes the way you approach things. I mean, from a management standpoint, I would like to think that I allowed people to do more than what I did initially, and they certainly had the ability, and you gain this trust, and so you give them a project, and you check on it, but you know that at the end of the day, they're going to be hustling to make it happen.
A little more hands-off towards the end?
The team would probably tell you I was not hands-off.
Okay.
I would like to think maybe I was, and then I love what Jim Barber used to say. He said, Mayor had an idea, and all of a sudden Jim had a problem. Well, he didn't mean what he meant by that was he had to figure out a solution to whatever crazy idea.
You're the idea guy.
So I don't think I ran out of ideas because there's so much room for improvement. But I leave with a greater sense of appreciation of a lot of civil servants.
Okay.
They're really some hardworking and very smart, dedicated people that work in government. And I think a lot of times they get bashed because of various reasons. But for my perspective is, or our perception is, that if there's a problem with civil service workers, it's the leadership. It's not necessarily the workers themselves. It's who's in charge. Now, we do have some things that make it difficult from a discipline standpoint and things that are challenging when you come from the private sector. But by and large, leading people to do what they can do, if you give them the opportunity, most of them will take that opportunity. Every now and then you have a toxic employee.
Right.
And we have a toxic employee. I don't care if it's in the government or if it's in the military, which is government, or if it's in a private business. You've got to deal with toxic employees, no matter where they are.
All right. I want to say before we wrap up here, too, that your projection, crystal ball, we went back a couple times. Now we're going forward. What does our city look like in 10 years, 20 years?
So new airport, the National Maritime Museum, I think we'll be having the kind of tourism that we had hoped for initially. I think that you'll see bigger cruise ship. I would like to think maybe you'll have a second cruise ship.
Okay.
I don't know. It's going to take a little bit to make that happen. And you'll see a lot of commerce, created because of the port. What I'm hoping that we're going to see is a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
because 10
years,
nothing,
20 years.
Nothing,
you and I were talking about this a decade ago.
Nothing is optimized. I mean, the airport, if you have a gridlock on I-10, the deepening and widening the channel, the airport, the arena, everything will pay a price because you've got the gridlock.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope that the bridge will resolve that. But the future is very bright from an economic development standpoint. And what's going on with workforce development through what Bradley Burnham, the Chamber of Commerce, is doing, along with the collaborative partners at the community colleges. We've never done things like we're doing right now in order to prepare for businesses to come to Mobile. So they're lined up, and it's just going to be very interesting to see how we address the housing issue. That's going to be the biggest issue.
Sure. Did we grow at a pace that we can keep up? Yeah, that we can keep up with.
But it's not just Mobile. It's all across. Housing all across the country is a challenge.
Yeah. I agree. We'll see. But it's not a nice problem to have. I don't want people to have problems. But it's that there's demand for housing is better than not having the demand.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, for sure. All right. As we wrap up here, too, I'd be remiss in asking you, like, what's next?
So don't know exactly. I haven't gotten in quite to a routine of what it's like to be retired because mm-hmm. I'm very busy. I've had some interest expressed in me being involved at different boards, and I think if I think I can add value there, I'll do that. And I've told Mayor Spiro that if he's got questions, just let me know. It's his deal. I don't want to get in his way. I don't want there to be perceptions there's two mayors out there because there's one. That's him, and I'm very glad it's him.
All right, and last question. Will you get to turkey hunt this coming season, this spring?
I hope so.
All right,
yeah.
good deal.
What day's open today?
It's March 20th this year, I think, March 20th.
Yeah. Maybe the 22nd. How about that? Let's see what day that is.
There we go. All right. You see, he knows. I love it.
Okay.
Thank you for coming in.
Great, great being in. Thank you for what you do, Sean.
Thank you. We'll do it again tomorrow right here on Midday Mobile.